Hello and welcome to Season 11, Episode 35 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday the 6th of November, and we're going to be discussing what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Martin, and this week I'm joined by @MarksJohnson with an X.
Hello. Oh, that's me. Yes.
That's you. And @Popey.
I'm the one with the pronounceable nickname.
It's actually Mark Johnson. It's like LaTeX.
Right. Okay. Or LaTeX, I hear some people pronounce it.
Retro.
Yeah.
I never know how to pronounce that. I always think it's LaTeX, but there you go.
Yeah. I simply don't know. So, Mark, what have you been up to recently?
I have been playing with the Windows subsystem for Linux.
Right. What have you been doing with that?
I have been, well, we are in the process of hopefully getting new computers for our development team at work. And because we use Windows on the desktop, even though we're developing targeting Linux, we are upgrading to Windows 10.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And therefore, we have the opportunity to try and use the Windows subsystem for Linux to run our local development environment. So up until now, we've used like Git Bash on Git for Windows for various tools, but we have to run like the Windows version of Apache and the Windows version of Postgres and bits and bobs like that to do our local development, which takes an awful long time to set up and has some really complicated documentation, and installing stuff like that on a Windows desktop is just not easy.
And how have you found WSL by comparison?
Well, I now have a script which you run the script and it does it all. So, yeah. So basically, when we migrate, I'm going to give everyone this script and hopefully it's going to speed everything up quite a lot. And when we get new people in, they can run this script and it'll work. There's a few oddities, like when you create a database in Postgres, you get a bunch of errors because there's an optimization thing that doesn't work with the way the file systems work. And I've had to do a bit of faffing around to do things like we use PHP Storm as our development environment, and integrating the Windows PHP Storm with like the PHP interpreter running in WSL is a bit tricky, but I managed to get all that working. And generally speaking, I'm actually quite impressed with how well everything integrates. It's good.
Do you think it would stop you migrating to Linux? Like if there was an opportunity to move to Linux, would this stop you doing it? I've seen that as one of the cited reasons why Bash for Windows is bad.
You mean if we could have our desktops running Linux,
could choose your desktop and others in your team could choose your desktop, do you think this would stop them switching to Linux?
I don't know what everyone else would say. I know a few people would definitely switch to Linux. I definitely would. This wouldn't stop me. It's basically the reason we stick on Windows is because we're given the computers and told that they will support Windows and nothing else. So, yes.
Right, the common corporate.
Yes.
Right. What have you been up to, Martin?
I have been in Salt Lake City, and upon my return from Salt Lake City, I had one disturbing and one exciting surprise waiting for me when I got home. So while I was away, it seems that there was some attempted home invasion by some unknown individual. Fortunately, my wife and daughter managed to dispatch him with frying pans and cooking pots, although the shallow grave in the herb border in the back garden was a bit much to deal with.
Are you saying we're not going to have Jesse on as a guest presenter again?
I think so.
Right. And you had some bad news as well.
Oh, boy. Also waiting for me was a delivery from Lenovo, which was a ThinkPad P1 laptop, which I've just been getting to grips with.
Ooh. Will we be hearing more about that in a later episode?
Yes, if you like. Let's do that.
Okay, good.
So, with that, let's get on with some news. And here it is. Here's the news from this week. Alan.
Large company buys other large company. This is a bit of old news because I think everyone's heard this already. Even my father-in-law heard about it and told me all about the detail of the deal that IBM, Large Big Blue, have bought Red Hat for $33 billion.
Mm. That's a lot of money.
That's all the dollars.
An awful lot of money. And it was a bit of a surprise on a Sunday evening. A surprise to a lot of people who work at Red Hat, I would imagine, as well as lots of other people. The statement that they've put out says that Red Hat will remain a separate operation. Don't believe that for a minute. but, you know, that it's reasonable to expect there will be a period of time where Red Hat stands alone as an entity which provides services to IBM, and the IBM salespeople sell Red Hat services to their customers. That makes total sense.
But that wasn't that the case already, though? I mean, they've been partners for a while.
Yeah, but this is a much closer mode of operation, I would imagine. Yeah. But I don't know. It's a tricky one to call, because you can look back over things IBM have done over the years, and people have cited similar acquisitions and mergers that IBM have done and say, well, they did this before, they'll do it again. And, you know, reduce Red Hat down to rubble and merge everyone into IBM. But I don't know. Is this something different? Is this a new IBM? Are they going to get a new CEO in? CEO of Red Hat going to move over? These are all questions we can't answer yet, and we just have to wait and see.
I think it would be foolish to think that IBM are going to spend all of this money and then run a successful, profitable company into the ground when Red Hat is the injection that it really needs to sort of make itself relevant in today's world. So I would hope IBM are going to be intelligent about the way that Red Hat is integrated.
You would hope so, yeah.
Go on, Mark.
Yeah, and I mean, Red Hat is not a brand which they would want to sort of subsume and lose. It's the recognized corporate Linux enterprise, you know, that companies buy when they want to buy a supported Linux. So it's not like they're going to want to just, you know, have all the talent and take it into IBM and then lose that product which people are paying money for.
Now, there is bits of Red Hat, or, you know, projects that exist under a Red Hat banner that I do fear for, probably rather selfishly. And that's that, you know, there's lots of people that are employed by Red Hat that work on stuff in the Linux community. And a lot of that stuff is directly beneficial to the Linux desktop.
Yeah.
And Red Hat have been moved into, or will move into, the IBM hybrid cloud group. And I worry that a lot of the good stuff that people at Red Hat work on that benefits the Linux desktop may, over time, fall away from, you know, the priorities of IBM and their business mission. And
given the tone of the press releases, I think that's a reasonable worry to have, because it has all been about the hybrid cloud. That's what they've been talking about, why they bought them, what this means for both companies. That's what they want. They want cloud offerings that can, you know, not only sort of, compete with Amazon, Azure, Google, but offer something a bit more unique, in that you can run stuff on premises as well.
Yeah. So time will tell. I mean, is there anything that's come out of the analysis of all of this that's caught your attention?
Well, Mark Shuttleworth had some words to say, didn't he?
Yes, I think it would be surprising if he didn't have words to say about one of our competitors being purchased by one of our partners. Yes, that does make sense.
Yes, his tone seemed to be, I don't know, he seemed to be a bit dismissive of Red Hat in general, seeming to say that they'd, you know, lots of Red Hat customers have moved to Ubuntu. So it doesn't really matter that they've been bought now. Everyone's going to move Ubuntu and drive open source to the future.
And it's difficult, because obviously we work for Canonical, but we see some of these presentations about customer wins that Canonical have had. And yeah, sure, there are some customer wins where Red Hat have lost, and other large bidding companies have lost out to Canonical. And I'm sure on the other side, there are companies who promote the fact that their sales team won that day. You know, it's it's a hard one to call until we look back in our rocking chairs at the last 20 years. Yeah. One other small article, the Register did a ridiculous piece about Red Hat no longer supporting KDE, and this has been largely poo-pooed as a daft article. And
on the Register, surely not.
Who knew? But Jonathan Riddell has set the record straight, and so we'll link to his blog post in the news as well, because that's worth reading.
Yeah. Also in the news is System76, and they have just announced their new Thelio desktop computer, which features open source designs. So what do you make of this news?
If I was in the market for a desktop PC, I quite like the look of them. I mean, the problem
what about the look of them do you find appealing?
I like the modularity. So once you take the lid off, there are these nice little bays, vertical bays that SSDs slot in at the top, and you attach the SATA and power cables at the bottom. It just looks I'm looking at my desktop PC that's next to me, and I've got SATA drives dangling inside the case because there's nowhere to put them, and the cable
hanging by the cable.
Yeah, exactly. And the cable management is awful. But these things look well designed inside. My worry is that some Chinese manufacturer will just knock up a duplicate of the case, and that's one of the most attractive parts of it, is the beautiful case.
And the reason that somebody might be able to do that is because they're going to be releasing the designs to the chassis and what have you under the, is it Open Source Hardware Alliance?
Right. But that's only part of it. You know, there's some other bits and bobs in there that make it more interesting. They have a board that manages the hardware so that it offloads some of the services that you would normally have in binary blob firmware on the motherboard. It offloads that to another board, which they've designed themselves. Yeah. So they've received some criticism that they've used terms like open hardware, and it, you know, because it's got, CPUs and GPUs from the major manufacturers that contain binary blobs or need binary blobs in order to enable all their capabilities. It's not technically open hardware, but they're on a road towards that, and parts of this are open or open designs. So
I think people leveling those criticisms don't understand how the Open Source Hardware Alliance works, because it isn't about having every component technology in the system being open. It's about having open designs for the chassis and what have you, so that you could create and build one of these. And any parts that you can't construct yourself have to be ready available components that anybody can purchase, rather than specialized proprietary components. So that's why it falls under this OSHWA certification.
And they're quite funky. They've got like a wooden curved wooden side, which is quite distinctive. It's not something you tend to see on computer cases these days. They're mostly rectangular boxes or angular or clear plexiglass fronts with lots of LEDs inside them. So they've gone for a different look and feel.
Yeah.
And they're quite pretty. I like the look of them.
They're quite retro. They remind me of like television sets that my parents had in the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
And I suppose that the important thing we should mention is, of course, these are not just like off-the-shelf cases, that these whole things are being manufactured entirely by them in their own manufacturing facilities that they've created over the last year or so.
Yeah.
And the other important thing, of course, is that they run Ubuntu.
I guess they can do, but I would imagine they're going to run, as I understand it, System 76 machines now default to having Pop OS on them.
You can still choose they have Ubuntu, an option, though.
Yes.
So you can have Pop OS 1804 or 1810, or you can have Ubuntu 1804 as an option.
Nice.
So, Mark, what else?
Well, if you're using an SSD and you rely on the hardware encryption, you might be out of luck. A draft research paper from Radboud University in the Netherlands has shown hardware encryption on several models of SSD to be broken.
Broken in the case of, like, it's easy to hack?
Yes, essentially. So they basically downloaded some firmware images designed to be, you know, flashed onto your SSD and had a poke around to see how the encryption was working on them, and found... in one case, they found that there is an option to have a master password to unlock, which can be turned on or off. And even if it's turned off, you can still use the master password to unlock. Brilliant. And in those cases, the master password was an empty string.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I think they tried about 6 or 7 different models from 3 different manufacturers and found them all to be compromised in some way.
Were they all Mr. Chan's cheapo SSD company limited?
No, we're talking about Crucial, Samsung, people like that.
Wow. Organizations that should really have got better due diligence in this regard.
And has there been any response from these manufacturers?
I'm not sure. I've only actually seen this today, and I think it's sort of a developing story.
Oh, dear.
But one particular problem with this is apparently BitLocker, the Windows full disk encryption solution, essentially relies on the hardware SSD support if it's there. So if it's there but it's broken, there's no software layer on top to catch you.
Oh, interesting.
So it's giving people a false sense of security that their data is safe on an SSD when, in fact, it's far from it.
Yes. And in fact, I'm not sure if it's actually related to this, but when I was recently getting rid of an SSD and I wanted to find out how to secure erase it, like you would do with something like DBAN on a spinning hard drive, I found essentially the solution is that everything is being written with a level of encryption, and to securely erase it, you just throw away the key and generate a new one, and then you can't read any of the old data. So I don't know if any of this is affecting that as well. You know, if you've done that and then thrown away the hard drive, the old data can still be decrypted.
Time to buy some old SSDs off eBay and see what you can get off them.
See what data you can grab off it.
Yeah.
Right. There must be some uplifting birthday news, Alan.
Uplifting birthday news, part one. Fedora, Linux distro, has turned 15. 15 wow. years old.
Gosh, that's worrying.
Is that including Fedora Core?
Yeah, that's from...
That is Fedora Core, right? Fedora Core 1.
Yeah, Fedora Core 1 from ye olde times, from back in, whenever it was, 2004 or maybe earlier.
I think it may have been earlier than that. I've got a memory that I think I was installing Fedora Core 4 at around the same time that Warty Warthog was in its sort of beta releases.
Right. So, yeah, Fedora Core 1 was released in 2003. It's interesting because just last weekend, I, for some reason, randomly downloaded the ISO. I discovered you can actually still get the ISO for Fedora Core 1, and I booted it up inside a VirtualBox to have a play with, like I do. and I had to tweak a couple of settings because it didn't support SATA controller. So I had to tell it was a IDE hard drive. But once I got past that, I managed to get it installed all the way to the end, and the graphical environment came up. I think it was using like basic VESA video driver, but the desktop came up with a familiar Red Hat start menu at the bottom left, and the blue wallpaper with very colorful, kind of almost isometric 3D,
Gosh, yes, I remember.
And I tried a few things out. The web wasn't a resounding success, but amazingly, printing was. I opened cups and was able to connect to my relatively new HP laser printer. And I just gave it the IP address and told it it was an HP LaserJet 5. And on my desk, I now have a printer test page printed out from Fedora Core 1 from 2003 on a modern printer. I was quite surprised that that was.
Guess that just goes to show how little cups has changed.
Well, yes. I actually jumped on, tested the IRC client that was built in, and jumped on the Fedora IRC channel and said, where can I get support for Fedora Core 1, please? And, they pointed out that this was ever so slightly out of support in a very friendly way. So, congratulations to Fedora for turning 15.
And it is convenient that you jumped onto their IRC channel, because also celebrating a birthday this week is IRC itself, which is 30 years old.
Good Lord, really?
Mm. Wow.
Truly, 1988 was a fine year.
1988, yes. I was quite young then.
As was I.
I think.
And it's still alive now. Like, people still use IRC. We, amusingly, today at work, we had a whole bunch of people in the office, and We wanted a
and you were all on IRC instead of talking to each other.
For part of it, yeah. We wanted a quick and easy way to get everyone talking to each other for people who were all from different companies. So The decision was, let's create a new IRC channel. So we created an IRC channel on Freenode, gave everyone the channel name, wrote it up on the wall. That's it. Everyone's chatting. There's no, you know, barriers to entry. Everyone can get on, whether it's a browser or an IRC client. You know, 30 years later, it's a great common denominator for chat. And whatever you think about net splits and, you know, spam and all that kind of stuff that goes along with having IRC, it's great and it's survived very well, I think.
More cost effective than Slack as well.
Yes.
Right then, let's move on to some community news, shall we?
There's always room for more feedback. On our website, each episode has its own comments, so post yours on ubuntupodcast.org.
Right then, Mark, what community news have we got?
Well, first up, we know the code name for Ubuntu 19.04, and it is the Disco Dingo.
I love this name. This is my favourite Ubuntu code name ever.
I don't know why. I only ever see it written down, and I think you're the first person who I've heard say it out loud. It's brilliant. It's even better when said out loud.
It makes me smile when I hear it or say it, because it conjures up images of, you know, dancing dogs and what have you. And I can't wait to see what Sylvia Ritter does with the imagery behind these words in her usual poster art of the code.
I hope there's an afro involved.
It's a shame Mark hasn't blogged about the rationale for having Disco Dingo. Usually Mark Shuttleworth writes a blog post outlining his plans or what he hopes for in the upcoming release, and usually gives some rationale behind the name. But he hasn't on this occasion, which was amusing, because a couple of people pinged me and were slightly incredulous that this was the name and wanted to verify that usually there's a blog post. Why is there no blog post? Are you sure this is really... Well, show me the evidence that this is really the name. I was like, well, I'll go on Launchpad and you can see it's right there. Yes, but it only says Disco. It doesn't say Disco Dingo on there. So is it really Disco Dingo? I was like, yes, it really is Disco Dingo, I'm afraid. So yes, it's very stupid, but I like it.
I do as well.
I imagine you find out from some sort of special internal company email.
No, we all find out at the same time. There is the process is basically Mark comes up with a name and he tells the release manager, and the release manager presses buttons in Launchpad and creates the series in Launchpad, and as soon as that's created, everyone finds out at the same time.
Then how do you know it's Dingo?
Because that's a good question. Because the release manager must have said it to someone in IRC, I imagine.
Right. Okay. Well, here's to the Ubuntu Disco.
As we've outlined in our previous news item, IRC is the way you communicate 30 years later.
Well, also, community update from Zubuntu. They're doing these monthly updates now, and they've got a little bit of a retrospective on their recent 18.10 release, where they talk about how six more of the components that make up XFCE and Zubuntu have now transitioned to GTK3.
Golly.
And they're targeting XFCE 4.14 as the version of XFCE that will feature a full GTK3 implementation. And they tell us that XFCE 4.14 is now approximately 83% complete.
Approximately.
Specific.
No, it's not approximately 83% complete. Yes. So, you know, they've got some interesting stuff there about the components that are complete. Of the core components, there's a handful, I think three, that are very close to completion, either like 90 to 99% complete. And then, of course, because XFCE has a suite of applications and utilities, there's then quite a long tail of, you know, applications and panel applets and various other components that are at various stages in that journey. But looks like they're making good progress, and it won't be too long before we see a GTK3 Zubuntu.
It's interesting that this has moved on, because it wasn't that long ago we were lamenting the lack of updates in the XFCE world, and Zubuntu was like looking very much the same for a while. And now we're getting these regular updates, which helps to let everyone know that, you know, there's still going, still alive, still moving forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, development is going on at a pace that even Joe Ressington will enjoy, I'm sure.
Yeah. And talking of things that are still alive.
Yes, indeed. In our latest Mir is Not Dead news, there's some more Mir news from the Mir team over on the Ubuntu Community Hub. The update says it's a little bit of a slow news week, and there's a few updates of what's been going on, a little bit technical. But interesting little tidbit from these updates that Mir now supports Vulkan, mm-hmm. which it seems surprising to me that like this brand new technology should work on Mir, which always felt like it was like always a prototype and never quite finished and not quite there. And something as modern as Vulkan should just work on Mir is.
And the strange thing is, it did just work. I got the world exclusive on this because I was sat next to Alan Griffiths at the Salt Lake City Sprint, and he said, somebody just asked if Vulkan should work on Mir, and we think it should. So I'm building this, you know, demonstration Vulkan application in the Mir desktop environment, and he just compiled this thing and ran it, and sure enough, all of these visual effects burst into life, and he was like, that works then. Next.
Was this using, like, Intel and open source drivers, or was it using a
this NVIDIA particular thing was using the Intel drivers, although the other thing in this Mir update is the fact that they've landed changes for supporting NVIDIA through Mir as well.
Okay.
And they say that hopefully next week in Mir we'll have a video of the iconic GL Mark II spinning stallion running under Unity 8 on NVIDIA hardware.
That will be very cool.
Yeah.
I'm bringing my HDMI hardware capture card to work tomorrow. I told Alan Griffiths that I have one, and he went, ooh, because he quite likes the idea of capturing the frames over HDMI rather than doing software capture to like not lose any frames. So
I shared my software capture solution with him last week, so I think I'd much prefer a piece of hardware that can capture all those pixels at 60 frames per second.
Yeah, absolutely.
And finally, I'd just like to say congratulations to Eric Eckmeyer, who's from the Ubuntu Studio team, who's recently become an Ubuntu member. Eric has been in and around the Linux community for a long while and was one of the people that helped me bootstrap Ubuntu Mate way, way back when we first started that project. So congratulations, Eric. Okay, that's the end of the community news.
Do you use Google Plus? I'm sorry. Feel less alone by giving our post to Plus One. Then go to the pub and tell your friends about the Ubuntu podcast.
Oh dear.
Should we remove that from the rotation?
let's just keep it in the mix until the end of this year. We can kill our Google Plus page at the end of the year, maybe. Yes. Well, that is all for episode 35. And we'll be back next week, when we're going to be talking to Andrew Katz about open source and the law. Ooh. We'll also have a command line love and all your wonderful feedback. If you want more Ubuntu Podcast, follow us at Ubuntu Podcast on Twitter. See you soon.